Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? It's me, your boy. And once again, having a little technical difficulties calling in and getting into the website and stuff like that. My name is Citizen Payne, also known as the son of Kay Thompson. Welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/, or some people say /, whatever. It's the one going from the upper right-hand corner to the lower left. I think that's the /, people say. I always thought it was the /, but it seems to be the /, blogtalkradio.com/ Kay Thompson Live. That's how you reach directly to our website. Get a little late start this evening, but we're going to be on for the whole time, at least 60 minutes. Let me just welcome in our legendary newsman, the one, the only, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, how are you today, sir?
Hey, good evening, Citizen Payne. How's everything with everyone there?
Everything is going okay. My mom is a little bit under the weather, so it's just going to be us and Brother Saunders when he calls in. And
okay.
We're going to have a guest, councilwoman out of Plainfield, North Plainfield, New Jersey, Keona Miller, might be calling in and joining our discussion. She always has a lot to say about the issues. And if anybody else wants to call in, the call-in number is 323-679-0906. Just talk about the general news of the day, Wayne. I mean, I think, what I was noticing that Jay Johnson was on Capitol Hill, was it today, I believe, right, where he was testifying about what he knows about the Trump and the Russians.
Connection.
Hacking our election. And obviously one of the big things he said was it's no doubt that they were involved and affected the outcome of our election. So here's the Secretary of Homeland Security, I think that was his title. And, it just keeps coming, you know. I mean, it's a fact that this guy did what he did. And talking about 45, Donald Trump, some people call him the president. But just the fact that, I mean, this man committed treason. And I watched something, I was watching Chris Matthews a little bit tonight, which I'm not the biggest fan of him because I think he's kind of Democrat-light, Republican.
Yeah, he swings both ways. I hate to use that analogy, but I hear what you're talking about.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? I mean, what I find, and also the news, obviously, is that Democrats lost those elections, that people thought they might have a slim chance of winning when, of course, they were really going to lose in both of those Republican districts. But what I think that a lot of people will not cop to, will not just come out and say it, is that there's a large portion of this country that's still pretty racist. And there are Democrats. There majority of them are in the Republican Party, I believe. But there are a lot of them that are still Caucasians that are still have issues with, obviously, Obama having been president. And with the growing diversity in America, and although they seem to talk like they want to be progressive, when it comes down to voting, and I think when they go in that booth, they really pull the lever for Republicans, and I think that there's an appeal there, a nationalist racial appeal to a lot of people that they don't want to admit to, but they adhere to. And I don't know what you think about that, Wayne. I can imagine a lot of people disagree, but that's the only conclusion I can draw, why we still have these problems.
I see what you're saying, and I can understand it, but I've gotten to the point now, sometimes I just think a lot of what goes on is indicative of the news cycle. It seems like, yes, racism is alive and well, and I think it will always be in the United States, regardless of how many, you know, past our lifetimes, that will always deal with that issue as long as things are set up the way they are. Is it getting better? Slowly it's getting better. I mean, the fight that our parents went through, and mine were older than yours, we don't see that as much anymore. But then you have the case in Minnesota with the jury finding that Latino cop who killed the black brother with his girlfriend in the car in front of their child. You know, mm-hmm. they saw no racial factor in as a component, and that was a mixed jury. There were one or two people of color in that, you know. And now you see the videotape of what went on because they weren't allowed to show it before. And to me, he jumped the gun. I mean,
right?
Can you make an argument about somebody? But I mean, the deal is that the man had asked for the brother's victim's credentials. And unfortunately, I guess he felt he was coming out with a weapon. And it's just one of those things. There's something that has to change in the culture. That vote in North Carolina, it was close. But, I mean, again, it's a Republican seat because the previous occupant is now in Trump's cabinet. And the bottom line is a lot of money was spent. But I still think Democrats have got to make a stronger effort to resonate the issues that are, you know, because I think the average American person gets it. You know, I think they see through this health care issue. I think they see the lopsidedness and the lack of experience of having somebody like a Donald Trump. And you can't afford to give someone a pass because, you know, they just don't have a political background. Inexcusable. He ran for the seat, and he, as we'd say back in the day in Brooklyn, he bogarted his way to becoming the nominee for the GOP. And now he's just using more of his wit and what limited intellect he has to keep his campaign, because I think he's still campaigning. He's not dealing with the issues of the presidency. Alive, because he knows the minute something that goes against him, right away it's a negative news cycle. But you can't disassociate yourself from things that you've done that smack of criminal activity. And once that is founded, I'm pretty certain that there'll be a process in which you'll be removed from office, and that's it. I still maintain that's down the pike, and I just think, you know, people are caught up in his arrogance and just this cavalier attitude about his vision of America.
Well, you touched on a couple of things I want to address there. One is, first off, from the most immediate point you just made, Donald Trump. I think he's a beneficiary of white male privilege to the 9th degree. And I think that's how he got in office. He did bogart that, but I was talking to some people that work for my cousin's office, Congressman Donald Payne, and we were talking about how having a discussion about, you know, how you can, after the election of the first African-American president who had to conduct himself to be twice as nice, twice as tolerant, never can show any of the anger, certainly the issues that we saw come up that Donald Trump exhibits on a daily basis.
Exactly.
And we can go from a very civil presidency, a very try to be polite presidency, even though he was really experienced the most impolite response by many people. And we go to the other end of the spectrum, the most vile, vindictive, insulting, mean-spirited, nasty individual of that crop of individuals that they had to choose from. And of that crop of individuals, they chose the person that was to the furthest extreme from what a Barack Obama would be, almost choosing the guy who really was basically appealing to people's racial racism. And my opinion that the majority of the Republican Party does consist of people who are intolerant of diversity, who do not want diversity, consists of people who think it's okay. I mean, are just, to me, on the evil side of things. And I say that because if you think it's okay for people to be slaves, if you think it's okay for people to continually be shot with impunity, if you try to rewrite history and say that there was no such thing as slavery, or as an article I read on the internet yesterday about these plantation museums that they have in the South, where people reenact these plantations, and then you believe in that. If you condone that type of thing, if you co-sign on that, I can only believe that that is part of your belief. And that when Donald Trump comes in, out and says, you know, a lot of Mexicans are murderers, rapists, and you stand there and you kind of agree with that, or that you kind of accept that and you still vote for this man, I can only agree that you feel that way too. I can only surmise that you feel that way. And the release of this tape of Philando Castile being shot, you know, I see how they were able to make an argument to get the police officer off. If you listen to it, and I see why they released it, because if you listen to it, it does make the cop look like he was somewhat reasonable, and it was just one of those things. You can make the argument. I can see how they can make the argument to say where he was telling the guy, the reason I'm stopping you is this, this, and that. Let me see your license and ID. Apparently that some sort of ID was exchanged with the police officer. And then the guy said, and I also have, Philando said, I also want to let you know that I'm a licensed firearm. And in him saying that, it looks like it from the at least the police cam view that he's reaching across. And you also hear the cop, Yenes or whatever his name is, say at the same time, well, don't reach for it, you know, and then he starts firing automatically, which was still jumping the gun. But I think that that's why they released the tape, because it shows that, well, he could have misunderstood and the guy made a move and this and that. And they present, like I said before, within the legal system, that gray area, that circumstantial evidence area that these people always get off on. And certainly we know that the police are going to get off, because that's a large, a high bar to get over to establish that a cop did acted it out and should be arrested, A. And B, you know, the prosecutors and the whole judicial system, they all work hand in hand. So they're not going to, well, you know, they're pretty much on the same thing.
I don't mean to cut you off, Eric. I mean, I see your point with respect to that, but why? To my understanding, this man has been dismissed from the police force, you know?
Right.
If he were that saintly and following guidelines of the rule books of what they recommend in situations like that, I think they would have given him the benefit of the doubt, you know? They would have just relegated him to desk duty or something like that, you know. Maybe, you know, it just seems that they're very often these people in situations like that. Come again?
No, I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut, break your thought, but I just wanted to throw out real quick. Do you think his race had a factor in that? That he,
well,
that he,
you know,
didn't
he's a person of color. I mean, he's Latino. But that doesn't mean sometimes anything with respect to law enforcement, because it could have been a black cop, you know? I mean, sometimes they just overreact. I go back to that incident in the housing projects in Brooklyn. Oh, the fact that he got off?
Well, the fact that he...
I don't know. You know,
off,
I never thought of it that way.
Right, but I was talking about the fact that even though he didn't go to jail, he wasn't able to retain his job.
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. You know,
right.
I think it was costly to put that. And the thing is that I guess the city feels that they were able to save a couple of dollars, but there's no way in God's green earth that the family should just accept that and keep it moving. You know, I mean, it's
right.
Just unfortunate, you know, how that, and even what the girlfriend suffered during that, just the abuse, you know, being locked up in a hot patrol car for 45 minutes with a daughter, and at one point being restrained. She didn't commit a crime, you know. And, again, they take that time to get their act together. It's that whole 48-hour rule thing that most of us are familiar with in cases, particularly in this part of the country. But
they got to get their story straight.
Yeah, exactly. You know, So once they got the story straight, and the only thing that just seems to the that stands in the way today is that you have these cams in the car, you know, that you could see, you know, visually what's going on during the point of impact with the between the purported suspect and the law enforcement. You know, they got to make sure, and even that can be doctored. You know, I mean, you have a lot of time in which to, you know, make something that doesn't look right, you know?
Yep.
But
exactly.
It's just one of those things. I want to say in some ways, I think having the driver's cam and in the patrol cars, and even in just in regular society, it's a good thing. You know, I someone who's been falsely accused in a car accident, you know, if I had some sort of, memorialized video of what went through during the course of the incident, maybe circumstances are different. But, you know, in this case, you know, we're talking about a life. We're talking about an issue regarding the law. And it could be anywhere. It could have been you. It could have been me. You know, we've all been in situations like that from time to time. I think the one thing that I've learned from this experience is that, God forbid, whether you're in an area and you're even confronted with someone who looks like you, you stop the car and you be sure to put both hands on the dashboard, you know,
right,
and try not to show any kind of resistance. You may be, you know, angry. You could be, and I think any time you show any level of volatility or an arrogance as to, do you know who I am, why are you stopping me, yada, 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 and all that stuff, does not work in your favor, you know? Especially if you still want to be on the planet.
Yeah, not for black people. Don't work.
Yeah, exactly.
Arrogant.
You know, I mean, getting back to the whole thing with Trump, it bothers me that he had the audacity to blame the Obama administration for not doing enough to get this poor, innocent American student who was kept in prison in North Korea for more than a year. If he had been released earlier, that perhaps the outcome would have been different. You know, I mean, and for the family to even support Trump, it just does not make sense to me at all. But we're living in the area of in the era in which the news cycle is supposed to be so important, you know, and I guess people just play into whatever is going along, you know. I mean, whatever the Obama administration did, they felt was in their best interest, you know. Obama openly admitted that he did not go to sleep well at night because his mind was constantly on North Korea and what they could do. Now it's Trump's baby. What are you going to do? Throw it out with the bathwater? You know,
right.
Because you just felt that, you know, now that you have this cavalier John Wayne attitude about running the country and righting wrongs around the world, I noticed that he's very reluctant to, I mean, he'll talk a good game, but he's not yet to put his finger on the trigger to do anything to get rid of this despot, and that's it. So,
you know, there's a double standard for the Democrats then, and there's the Republicans. We know Trump is just a lie and sack of we know what,
yeah,
in my opinion, and blames everybody, takes responsibility for nothing, and blames everybody, even throws his own staff under the bus. So we
right.
know that he's a pretty despicable individual. He'll lie with impunity, knows he's lying, and everybody seems to accept that. And that's why I say that these people condone a certain level of deceit and evilness. I mean, if you're trying to justify a guy who lies constantly, and you get someone like Paul Ryan, who says, well, he's new to the job of being president, they're just making excuses and try to ride out as much as they can, derive out as much benefit as they can, until they're trying to use him like he's trying to use everybody else. And so, I mean, it's not the first time he blamed Obama, you know, blamed the black guy, played that age-old American tradition of blaming the African-American, you know, and it's just despicable to have this individual and everybody around him, like to say, the way they're able, like you said, control the news cycle, the way they're able to, this guy's able to say, well, I'm not being investigated, But the point is, everybody else around you is. No, you're not directly being investigated at the time that you fired Comey and all that other stuff, but everybody around you is. And for people to accept that and tolerate that, that's like it's okay. You can only assume that they condone that activity, that they do that type of activity. We know that if you look at the last two presidential elections, I mean, I keep looking at these, I keep hearing these people talk about the economy, and I saw this Democratic congresswoman out of Michigan talking about she knew that the guy was going to lose in Georgia, so did I, obviously, Republican district. And she kept talking about, well, the Democrats, we haven't made our case. We didn't talk to the American people. We didn't talk to the working class people. We talked to the elitists and this. And I saw another guy out of Ohio on Chris Matthews' show saying the same thing. And I don't think that that's true. I think what the Democrats have allowed the Republicans to do was to make up a narrative about us and then repeat that and lie about it over and over and over again until the people who are not very highly educated, who are going to be racist and prejudiced anyway, had believed that, and they just ran with that. It's like this narrative that they tried to establish with Benghazi and Hillary. I mean, Kevin McCarthy, who was going to be potentially head of the Republican Party and Speaker of the House at the time, if you remember, he was the one who said that we're going, the Benghazi trial is going to help us, you know, shut down Hillary Clinton's election and this and that, and campaign. He actually said that. And when he said that, that's why he got canned and didn't get the Speaker of the House job.
Right.
He got it for a short time. But that's when he got canned. And what I'm seeing is I see, you know, the talking head thing on TV is a real cushy job nowadays. And the more I'm seeing a lot of young people, maybe I'm getting older, I'm noticing. I'm seeing a lot of cats that they appear to be in their 20s, late 20s and 30s. And one particular girl I saw mentioning, you know, Democrats need to do this. I'm like, how? Where were you 8 years ago? In grad school? I mean, this girl really
yeah.
was so young. I'm thinking, you probably don't even remember what the economy was like when George Bush left office because you were probably in high school. So to have these people, the point I'm making is that there's such a short memory span. There's no attention to history. Because all of this talk about the Democrats need to create jobs, do these people seem to forget where the economy was when George Bush left office, that he left Barack Obama with an economy that was getting ready to go into a depression, and now 8 years later, a slow-moving economy, but Obama turned it around, and to see these people on these shows continually talk about the Democrats need to make our point and let working people know. What are you talking about? The Democrats have always been for working people. We just have allowed them, the punks, and have allowed the Republicans to label us how they want to label us. And, I mean, you've
got
the coal miners. You know, you got the coal miners in West Virginia who got really dogged out by this guy Blankenship, one example, who was running a coal miners company. And could care less, just recently got out of jail because of all the violations and the lack of the safety concerns he had for these guys. And still, these people vote for the Republican Party because they're not voting their interests. They're voting their that national, that racial, tribal thing that's deep down inside of them, that they think that the Democrats aren't going to be for them because you got some people from the East Coast and the West Coast that are pretty smart, that have gone to college, got graduate degrees, live in more diverse areas, that question these things. And the way they get over, they tell everybody in the Midwest, in the middle of the country, well, you know, these elitists, they want to tell you what to do and make fun of your homespun education or your common sense. It ain't too much common sense out there if they continue to vote against their interests and to fall for some carnival barker or some con man salesman just because he's the same tribe as they are. And clearly your common sense is in question. And they talk about the demographic group of non-educated, high school, non-college educated white men. And I hear that group. And here's what I suggest we do for that group. We need to get them GEDs and associate degrees so they can make better choices in who they vote for and they can better understand the issues. Because if that's what the issue was, then we need to help people get educated, but we need to rethink. We need to rethink giving everybody the vote. Maybe they're right. Maybe we should cut back on some people's votes and say you need a high school diploma to be able to vote. How about we do that? Or you need an associate's degree to be able to vote. Because if you don't, you don't understand the issues that are being faced by the country as a whole. You might not have the mental capacity to understand those things. That's just me.
Well, that sounds like prior to Abe Lincoln's time and the mindset of the white slave owners, you know, what they thought about us back then. I understand your point. I mean, I certainly know that it's not something that you'd like to see happen, but at the same time, you beg to wonder why, you know, some people just don't seem to get it. I happen to agree with you from that perspective, you know. But it's unfortunate that we're living in a time now that, you know, people with limited education are the ones that just make, you know, they don't follow what's going on. And the only thing that I would say with respect to what happened in the last election, you know, I was a Hillary Clinton fan. I thought Bernie Sanders did a lot to muddy the waters, so the message wasn't clear. But unfortunately, there are people out here who know how to close the deal, and then there are those who don't. We needed a Mariano Rivera on that pitching mound when it came to voting. Unfortunately, sure. Hillary is a great person. I mean, she has legislative abilities. She is somebody who is experienced and knowledgeable about how things work. But unfortunately, she's not a Mariano Rivera. Barack Obama is a Rivera. You know,
right? That's true.
I don't mean to use baseball as an example, but I mean we need somebody who can close the deal. And I think I think a lot of people get it. I think because of the uproar and the outrage that followed the election, once they realized that Trump was going to be president, you know, what this country witnessed with all sorts of groups coming together protesting, they get it. The problem is we didn't have a closer, and it was too much baggage with the person that we had, you know, and the damage was done. They knew how to play it. They knew, you know, even Johnson said today that, you know, the whole issue with Russia being involved in the elections, it was big news around the time that Billy Bush, that controversy with Trump, made the news cycle, and somehow, you know, Trump's attitude towards women was more sensational than the Russians being involved in the elections. Because I think the average American still can't fathom how a foreign nation would influence the outcome of an election. But this is the world we're living in today. Same way your computer gets hacked, mine gets hacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like people don't connect the dots.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about again, going back to you should have to have a certain education level to be able to vote. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm kind of being facetious a little bit to a certain degree, but you know,
you see the
wisdom or you see the thinking at the very least in that when the so-called guys who signed the Declaration of Independence, they like to call them the founding fathers, but whatever, the so-called founding fathers, when they signed this, they said, you know, there had to be the people eligible to vote had to be people of station or property owners or whatever, because obviously your property owner, to me, that indicates that people had to consider a myriad of problems being property owners and what that would do to their property and things like that. So you, more responsibilities, more things you get involved in, you've got to be aware of more things. So I understand that perspective. However, like I said, I'm being a little facetious, but the fact that they have been effectively able to label us, and we didn't help ourselves. I mean, you know, when you said she wasn't a closer, when you saw Hillary make statements like we're going to put coal miners out of work. Now, why would you say that? Why wouldn't you say we're going to help them? We're going to help them transition into other lines of work. I mean, I got mad. I was like, why are you saying we're not going to put them out of work? We don't want to put people to lose their livelihood, you know, hard to go.
Exactly.
You know, and for her to say that's it's like you said, it's a rookie mistake, man. It's a rookie mistake. Even when she was, you know, that time when she was being questioned at Benghazi, that whole hearing, and there was one clip of her saying, "What's the difference? He's dead now," and seeming to go off, but that expression What's the difference? What difference does it make? You play that little clip. You should know by now. They just take a clip, and it's, and it comes off like she's being cavalier about the attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And not to cut you off, Eric, but I happen to agree. I think that's symptomatic of the Clinton success. You know, we've been there. We spent 8 years in the White House. And I, you know, as a woman, you know, basically was involved with Bill all that time. But there was an arrogance about them that they felt they had it in the bag. And to a certain extent, they did. Even though she couldn't close the deal at the end, you know, they did have the upper hand. It's just that the news cycle and Comey and all the other things that stood in the way, you know, was not enough to withstand the impact of what they were trying to bring forth. And, I mean, I have never heard Barack Obama make a finer speech than the one he did to endorse Hillary the fourth night of the convention. I've followed this man, you know, from the time that he made his first appearance at the Democratic National Convention back in 2004, before I think he had just gotten into the Senate. And, I mean, the man just has a charisma about him and a passion about him that he knows how to close the deal. Now, you can't teach somebody that necessarily. I'm not saying it's not possible. But, you know, I don't think that's within Hillary's scope. Maybe her approach is radically different. But you can't go around doing like what you said, making appearances before the Congress and just losing your cool and not thinking that for one, you know, moment that that's not going to be replayed, you know, to work against you. Bill Clinton on the same tarmac with Loretta Lynch. No, I got to stop this fight. I have to exchange pleasantries with the Attorney General, you know. And to a certain extent, Loretta Lynch, you know, if what Comey said is true, you know, had no business treating that. I mean, if anything, she had, well, I don't know. I guess you get caught up in the moment.
It was a dumb move
on Bill's part. And I still think there's a part of me, I could be wrong, I don't think that boy wanted her in office. Excuse me to refer to him as a boy.
I mean, some of the things he was doing, that's what somebody else that I was talking to said they were even more jealous of his wife. Because also that, which was colossally stupid, when I heard about it, like, why the hell? And then also when he came out during the campaign dogging Obamacare and saying it was the worst thing ever. And I'm like, what's wrong with this guy?
Thank you.
I mean, why would you say that? I mean, your wife is running kind of on that platform, not this and that. So why are you going to come out? You know, he just get carried away. I don't know. But I kind of thought that, too. I was like, really, this dude is really – he seems like he's trying to tank his wife's opportunity. Or maybe the arrogance he talked about, they think that they could just do whatever, you know? I don't understand why, as Democrats, we just don't speak up loud and clear and say, listen, this guy's a liar. He's been lying. And you know, people want to have this talk about not being – using certain kind of language and politically correct and all that stuff. But you gotta put the truth out there. And it seems that Democrats want to soft sell the truth, don't want to call it what it is, man. And all the while, the Republicans have no problem. It's like when you're playing with your friend, you slap fighting, and all of a sudden they start trying to hit you a little bit harder. You're like, oh, I thought we were just playing.
Yeah.
You know, and so the Democrats, I'm sorry, we seem to be soft. We seem to be punkish about this. I mean, these people.
I don't know where that suddenly came from, because it just seems like that's happened within the last 8 years, and I hate to say it, with all due respect to your cousin, you know, I have issues with some members of the Black Congressional Caucus. You know, I just feel that some, you know, we have people like Donald Payne Senior and Junior. We've had people like Congressman Rangel out of Georgia, John Lewis and others, Conyers and people of that generation. But I don't know. I don't feel the activism that I once used to hear. It just seems like it's the old guard trying to train the new guard. And very often...
So you mentioned those individuals in relationship to them being the old guard trying to bring the new guard. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, you know, and I'm not saying this because I'm on, you know, your show and your mom's show and stuff like that, but at least Donald Jr. had the example of his father, and he was already,
yeah,
by the time your uncle was ready to leave us, you know, there was some seasoning there.
Yeah.
There was some marination, you know. There was understanding,
right,
of how the process,
right,
works. But there's,
right,
some others who come out of a political background, and I ain't going to call any names tonight, but I'm just somewhat disappointed by what I see. And I'm talking about the New York delegation. That's as far as I'll go.
From being around the individuals, I would probably tend to disagree, because I know that their hearts are in the right place in terms of trying to push the agenda forward for African Americans. I don't know the on-the-ground stuff in the various states as you do. That's your area of New York, since you're talking about some of the members of the New York delegation. But I can tell you that from what I know and being around these people, including those individuals that you talk about, to a person, the majority of them seem to be very focused on moving the agenda forward. And they seem to be the ones that kind of really, they call them the conscience of the Congress, because obviously they are concerned about the least of us, because unfortunately our people are falling in that category of getting affected the most when things go wrong in this country. You know, like I said before, America catches a cold, black people catch pneumonia. So,
yeah.
Being that we are, unfortunately, end up, many of us, a large portion, at least a large percentage of our population, ends up being in the position that's vulnerable to when, say, the ACA is changed, you know, when taxes are cut, when services are cut out of certain programs. The people who get hurt the most seem to be a large percentage of our population, because it's working poor, just barely middle class and things like that. So when you're at those levels economically and socially in a society, you might be dependent on certain services that the government might offer, that now when you get a Republican, a less compassionate administration in there, they like to call it fiscal conservatives, which basically means to me, I got mine, you get yours. And, you know,
exactly.
And so people are certainly within their rights, when you have a large collective like our country, to say that they don't want to pay for certain things. You know, I mean, I can't necessarily, things that I might be compassionate about, I can see that others might not be compassionate about. But, you know, that kind of goes against the theory of this being the United States. If you say it's the United States, then, you know, we here on the East Coast should be concerned about farmers in Midwest if they're having, give you an example, right? The guy Clive and Bundy, when he tried to make up the story about the government now wanting to make him pay taxes for his cattle that had been grazing on government land or whatever. When his story initially broke, and you hear the initial line of this story, you're like, you know, everybody's like supporting the guy. We're like, no, America, you know, they got to make the guy pay taxes to raise his cattle. He's an American kind of cattle guy. You know, just the whole image, the whole presentation of it. You're pro the guy. And then when you hear the details of the situation, that he's been owed these taxes for a while, they've told him or whatever, and then it gives you a little bit broader perspective. When you hear the story in context, you might have a different perspective. You might be like, well, Mr. Bundy, you might have to pay some of these taxes. I understand what you're saying. And then, you know, when the guy comes out and he starts saying these negative things about black people, then you just totally write them off. You can't take the person serious anymore. It's like, I tried to agree with you. You know, I agree with you certain things, but your perspective, the context of where somebody's from is like, it's like they almost want a double standard. They want to be treated like, well, you know, I'm this in the society. Don't you know who I am? You know, kind of that whole first-class citizenship that a lot of these people would have enjoyed in America for a very long time by terrorism and oppression of other peoples. And the individuals that believe in that way of life, they kind of get bent out of shape when they have to start acting like they're equals. You know, when they have to start, treating people like they're equals. And so when they get bent out of shape when you start saying, well, no, you can't get that benefit. No, you can't go to the front of the line. No, you're going to have to pay that ticket like everybody else, you know? So they get bent out of shape when all of a sudden you're not, you know, an individual with that first-class citizenship anymore. And that's why these people are upset about a lot of people coming over here, you know. And the crazy thing is, I saw Malcolm Nance on Bill Maher the other day, the terrorism expert that usually you might see on MSNBC. And he said, you know, there's a certain point with which the extreme right and the extreme left, they kind of meet, you know. The guy who decided to shoot the Republicans is similar to the guy that goes off the side to shoot Democrats, or the guy that was jumping the fence when Obama was. It's just that with Democrats, usually we're a little bit more reasonable. We're not more as apt, you know, if you're a more accepting person of diversity in the world and tolerant, you might not be as apt to want to shoot somebody who disagrees with you. You might not be as apt to try to make somebody the enemy who has a different ideology from you. And that's what these guys were saying, that in certain segments of the other side, their goal is to annihilate their enemy. Malcolm Nance said it's an intelligence term we use. You know, when people talk about their goal is to get rid of the enemy, to make the enemy go away, that means you want to annihilate them. You want to kill them. You want to remove these from the equation. So people with that perspective are not looking to live in a diverse world. They're not looking to share anything with anybody and to co-mingle, co-exist. They're looking to subjugate, to dominate people, to rule over people, to make people bow down to them. And we're going to have to get to the point, I believe, in this country where we reject that mentality, where a certain population has to come to terms with, you will not dominate people. You will not subjugate people. But you know,
my thing is that I understand that it should be a level and equal playing field. But you know, the deal is to dispel that notion at this point in time, when it's so in parts of this country, it is so ingrained. I mean, to me, Donald Trump's base in the Midwest and those states that are considered, you know, like the foundation of his campaign, you know, it's hard to unravel that mindset if you were reared a certain way and made to think a certain way, you know?
Of course.
And even though you could present your argument, there's still those who feel, well, I have a right to bear arms and I could do as I please and, you know, I just don't accept you all, you know. I mean, this is what makes America America, you know. But unfortunately,
and freedom of thought. But then when you get active, when you try to act on that, I can do, when you take from your thought, like the hell with you and this and that, when you take that, you put it into action, where you try to impede people's rights, restrict people's rights, that's when we have conflict, right? Because people are
right. And I think, I agree. And I think that's the problem. And I think that's what the world is now witnessing for the first time. The weaknesses in the American government system. This is a democracy, and everybody should have a right to speak out and say as they please without harming the other people who have a completely different opposing opinion. But the bottom line is that when you see that process in play, and the person who is now leading who was considered the opposition's in the fore and leading the country, but is not equipped to handle, you know, does not have the gravitas, if you will, to handle the responsibility of being president in the traditional sense, therefore you have a problem, you know? Even with George W. Bush, at least he had somebody in his family to fall back on, you know? We're dealing with someone who is just completely fresh out of water, you know, has you know, I mean, it has its own business acumen and success in one area, but does not understand how the process should work, but feels that if he could play the same cavalier, I know it all and you're nothing game that he plays on TV, that he's going to succeed. And unfortunately, there are enough gullible people out there who don't take this system seriously, and I mean people who look like us. This is my problem with what happened with the CBC, and I'm not saying that they don't do commendable work. The vast majority of them do. I shouldn't really come down hard on New York, but they're like one or two people I don't know. But that's just my perspective from my observations and stuff like that. But the deal is that once we have organizations like that, we have got to be on the forefront. We can't afford to let anything slip through the cracks, you know? And I just think that a stronger message or presentation could have been made to get those folks the day after the election and realize that Trump is now going to be running the country and felt that, oh, if we had another 4 years of Democrats, nothing will get done. So maybe, because I used to hear that notion up and down in the areas that I would travel, and I'm talking about in a racially mixed community. I would hear from people who had means and felt, well, gee, number one, America will never elect a woman, and number two, anytime Barack Obama tried to do something with the Republicans, nothing would happen. So maybe we should give a Republican a chance. And after all, he's successful. He's on TV. He owns all these hotels. I agree with you, Eric, that they need to go to school. You know, there needs to be a demarcation line or something. But I don't know. Maybe I'm not expressing myself properly.
If you're making a statement like, Barack Obama can't get anything done because the Republicans keep blocking him, then what does that tell you? To me, that suggests that someone's not thinking it through, or maybe they really are kind of a little anti-Obama, because if Obama's trying to get stuff done and the Republicans keep blocking him, as we know that they did, and that was their mantra from day one, then that probably would tell, I would assume, a thinking person that the problem is not with Barack Obama. The problem was with Republicans.
Well, you said it right. You hit the nail on the head. A thinking person.
Yeah. So, yeah, that goes back to what I was saying about people understanding the process as opposed to just listening to headlines and thinking for themselves. People don't understand the process of government, A, and B, they don't think for themselves. So that's why you have individuals saying stupid stuff like that. I think it's stupid and idiotic. I think that the mistake that Obama didn't make, though, was trying to be inclusive, include the Republicans in what he was doing when he very first got elected, because he did have the majority in the House and the Senate that first year or so when he got elected. They should have just gone through and rammed through what he wanted and got it done, because 4 years later, this is where we are now, that people are trying to dismantle everything he's done. They're not giving him credit for turning the economy around. It really is unbelievable. And that's what they say. I guess that's what the old folks say about history, right? You got to have people who are actually around to tell you the history, to pass on an oral
exactly.
History. Because if we allow others to write the history books, we already know what they'll do. We already know the fantasies and the myths and the stories and the lies they'll make up about themselves and about other people to perpetuate their narrative of supremacy and subjugation and imperialism. You know, I mean, we put forth to the world that America is this place, and compared to some other places, it is. It is one of the best, more civilized, one of the better countries in the world. But it's not all that it claims to be. It's not all that it presents itself to be, this land of opportunity and all that. The opportunity is here, but the type of opportunity, now how hard you have to work to achieve something, you know, it's really unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we have people that are around now that are representatives in the government that on our side that don't speak up loudly and clearly. I mean, I just couldn't believe that these people are saying the Democrats need to let everybody know that we're for the working man and woman. How in the hell did that get turned around? And how in the hell does Donald Trump get identified with the working man and woman?
I mean, well, I agree. And maybe it was taken in the wrong context. I don't want to think, because you did say this person was someone of color coming from urban America and all that, and I don't know if she was a member or he was a member of the caucus, but, you know, it's that kind of mentality that I just feel, you know, that we have to somehow overcome, because too many of us fall into that trap, you know? And yeah, the world is changing. I mean, you know, I was watching CBS the morning news this morning, and they had someone from the computer industry for like Silicon Valley, and talking about the jobs that are available. I mean, we're talking about millions of jobs that people obviously the opportunities are there, but they're not qualified because they lack the education to do that, or they're not in an educational pool that will allow them to transition from being a coal miner to getting into the computer age and understanding how the system works and things like that. And you know, I had to say to myself, if the opportunities are there and it's not even about, because the gentleman who appeared on TV said it wasn't even about the amount of money that they were making in terms of not money, but the educational background that they had. It wasn't about the amount of education. They said a college degree was irrelevant. You know, I mean, in other words, a liberal arts degree would have been appropriate. But the fact of the matter is that if you have the skills to pursue a job in that area and in which to achieve a certain amount, it didn't matter whether or not if you graduated from MIT having that kind of a background, they're going to openly accept you for employment if you fit the bill. That's the thing. And I think this is what's missing. You know, somebody needs to be there to explain that there are opportunities out here, and they're not all in New York or Silicon Valley in the West. You know, they're in other parts of the country, and there are people literally getting legitimate work and earning an income. But for some reason, I just feel the Democrats are not doing enough to basically send the message across, and I think this is what you're hearing from others that, you know, looked at the race, the contest in North Carolina the other day and felt, oh, woe is us. I don't think that's the case at all. You know, I just think that we have to be more vigilant and delivering the message and letting them know, you know, what's at stake out here, and that's it, and show them, because you're not going to hear it from Donald Trump. I'm sorry. You know? And I mean that's my myopic point of view, but I firmly believe, you know, that you know, you're going to get more of the same from Trump, and that's it.
Oh yeah, I mean this package that they're trying to push through now is just saying it's a package. They're saying it's basically a package for
I'll have to call you back.
A tax. They're saying it's a tax bill, you know, to try and
put
taxes for the wealthy. In this particular bill that they're trying to push through, that they're not trying to let anybody read or you know, not let anybody see until they get it ready. It's just ridiculous. These guys have had 8 years to come up with several different plans to counter Obamacare, right?
Right.
And they still don't have
them.
So what does that tell you? I mean, if you guys really were really concerned about it, wouldn't the first chance you got say, I got this plan A, you don't like that one, I got plan B, how about this one, how about that one? Wouldn't they just have a draft of a couple of different plans after eight? It's going on 9 years now. These guys have been complaining about it, but they've
exactly
no solutions. So it's unbelievable to me, but, you know, we're just about done. I guess Brother Saunders got caught up tonight. Maybe he was a little bit under the weather, too.
Yeah, I was wondering. I thought he was there with you, to be honest with you, you know. And I hope your mom is feeling better. I'm concerned. you know.
Yeah, she's just taking a little bit. We're still a little bit under the weather. She's taking the time off a little bit. But we also were supposed to have Councilwoman Keona Miller. I thought she was going to join the discussion too, but I believe that her responsibilities as a councilwoman probably precluded her from being able to call us, give us a call, and take part in our discussion. We'll try to get her on at another time. Once again,
yeah.
Wayne, we got to go. Our time is up. Time flies. We get to have these discussions, but as always, working and talking to a legendary newsman like yourself is always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you. I wear several hats these days, but I try to stay in the game, man. It's important.
Yeah. Yep. And people know your voice and been listening to your voice for quite a long time, and I'm sure that they're always interested in your perspective about things. I'll talk to you next week, my brother Wayne Gilman.
Okay.
Still, sir. All right?
Have a good one. Peace.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Once again, I wanted to say thank you to everybody for listening in to the K. Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am also known as The Sun. My name is Citizen Payne on the Facebooks. You might know me and that Eric Payne in real life. Thank you, everybody. You can also listen to the show. It's archived on the blogtalkradio.com/K Thompson Live. Take care, everybody. See you next week, 8 to 9 p.m. is when we're live. Thank you.